All right, so we're hot. Let me read the intro.
We're too hot.
There's too much to talk. Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre. This show is for the week of August 12th, 2018. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinker. How you doing, Mariah?
Doing well. How are you?
Good. And we're also joined by the prolific commentator and writer at Washington Monthly, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good. Well, it is a hot. We're going into the dog days of August, whatever the dog days of August are. All I know is it's quite hot. There's lots going on around the country in terms of climate news. I suppose one of the big issues that's out there is the fact that California is literally burning up, right? It's on fire. It's a new normal.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have a little bit of info about how it's the weather stations in southern states registered 23 all-time highs, and this is in Africa, that the temperature was recorded at 124.3 degrees Fahrenheit. In Africa, it was recorded in Algeria. And then in Oman, it was 109 degrees Fahrenheit at night, which is the hottest daily low ever recorded on Earth. Someone said climate change, Tanya Basu in the Daily Beast said, climate change is here and we are living in its burning embers.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so how far do you think message has sunk in, given the message that this stuff that we're seeing is not ordinary, it is not normal, it is not the old planet Earth, this is a new place. Is that sinking in? I mean, DR, what you were talking before about the media blackout on connecting the California wildfires to climate change, right?
And when you ask if it was sinking in, I remember there was a piece in The Guardian a couple of weeks ago about the wildfires in California, particularly in Redding, California, and they quoted some of the residents, and some of the residents were still, unfortunately, saying that the science is all bull, and this is all natural, and all this sort of stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, you have to have a really, really deep disconnection from reality not to even wonder. Mm-hmm. Not to even mm-hmm. wonder, even if you've heard nothing but raw denial for 30 years from your media sources, you don't wonder at all something's going on. And that's why I was shocked to see August 7th, NBC Nightly News, after all this controversy over the Nightly News not connecting the dots, they actually brought on Michael Mann to say, yes, there's a climate a thumbprint here.
So tell me, who's Michael Mann? Let's give him credentials.
From Penn State University, formerly the University of Virginia, and a guy who deniers in the fossil fuel industry have been going after and savaging for like 20 years now, making the point that yes, this is the new abnormal. Right. And this is caused by what we're doing.
Yeah, just to kind of add on to that, he did the famous hockey stick graph, which showed, mm-hmm. The sort of a trajectory that was kind of normal, and then this massive spike, which was like the blade of the hockey stick. So you picture a hockey stick sort of lying on its side, and he took a lot of heat, no pun intended, for this hockey stick graph as it being, it was inaccurate, it was flawed, it was based on bad science and all of these other things. And he became a punching bag for climate deniers. Really, they basically tried to tank his career and so on and so forth. I mean, it's happened to, of course, many, many folks who have put themselves out there with some really important science. So,
Like Galileo and stuff.
Well, right. I mean, people don't want to hear the things that, don't make sense to them, right? I think the other problem too is that if to be able to see climate change happening, you have to look at you have to be able to remember 30 years, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's the difference between climate and weather. Mm-hmm. And it's so hard for people to go on a 30-year basis in their memory. Yeah. You can remember how last year, take Montana, for example. Montana was destroyed by fires last summer, correct? I think last year. Mm-hmm. And this year, the snowpack was excellent. There was a ton of rain, a ton of wetness, and there haven't been as many. There's been a few fires in Montana. I actually flew over one the other day, but it's not nearly what it was last summer. And so people are, if you're in Montana, you're like, oh, you know, the wildfires aren't so bad this year. You're not saying that if you're in California. but, you know, you can see how there's this kind of disconnect where you, if we're just looking day to day, it's really hard to think in a 30-year bracket to see, 30 years ago, it did look significantly different than it does today.
Right.
And so the reality can be hard to grasp.
And I think it's hard to think, you know, 30 or 300 years in the future. I mean, if you have, you know, accelerated wildfires every 2 or 3 years, you have a couple of good years and then another bad year and a couple of good years and another bad year. I mean, over time, that leaves you in 100 years with a much depleted and damaged place. That is, no one will remember the original circumstance. I agree with you.
Right. And that's like the same thing with retirement. People don't save for retirement because it's so far in the future. How are we supposed to change our actions? I mean, it's not even that we need to change our actions. I think a lot, I think that innovation needs to happen. I think that's to some degree, regulation needs to happen.
But out in California, there's several fires that are burning simultaneously, right? And that's also a place where the governor is planning to fight back about the what the Trump administration is planning to do vis-a-vis the California emission standards, right? The backdrop being that the Trump administration wants to cut automobile or reduce the mileage that automobiles have to have. A roadblock to doing that is that California gets to set its own standards, and the Trump administration wants to take away that right for California to set its own standards. Is that the case, DR? I mean, what's happened there this week?
You're absolutely right that basically the Trump administration has decided to begin the process of trying to eviscerate California's efforts to reduce emissions and to have its own standards for clean vehicles. Obviously, it's going to result in a very, very lengthy court fight that may extend past, could extend past his administration. You do wonder if a subsequent administration, if one occurs in 2021, will basically call off the dog, so to speak. Mm-hmm. There is a new report by the LA Times stating that the proposal by the California Air Resources Board would require, under state law, automakers to meet California's existing standards on car and truck pollution, according to the LA Times, even if weaker ones are adopted by the Trump administration. So in other words, basically have a state law that says even if the special waiver granted under the Clean Air Act to have cleaner cars is wiped out by the Trump administration and the Trump-controlled Supreme Court, it will still exist under California law. So that'll be very interesting.
I mean, they're trying to put in place all the defenses they will need to fight the legal battle downstream over the next year or so by preparing themselves.
It seems to be the equivalent of where you see law, how in places such as Massachusetts, provisions are being made that in the event the Supreme Court wipes out Roe v. Wade, you know, a right to legal abortion will still exist statewide. A right to clean air will still exist in California, even if the Trump administration essentially desecrates the Clean Air Act.
Which, of course, will drive, because California has, the sixth largest economy in the world? Do I have that right?
Something like that, yeah.
Sixth or fifth, yeah. That drives auto manufacturers everywhere to try and meet those standards so that they can compete in California or with California, right?
Yeah, and you think that the automobile manufacturers in the U.S. are leery of the Trump administration's proposal, but it's also myopic in the sense that we talk all about the United States market being split between the California style and the rest of the country, but that means that GM will not be able to sell in Europe or China, right, which are enormous markets, which are going to be way ahead.
Yeah, their standards are, I mean, they have all kinds of standards that are, I think, 2030, 2040, they all want to be no all gasoline powered cars. It has to be all at least partially electric cars by 2030, 2040 over there. So how on earth are we going to compete to sell our cars over there? But also, you know, what about the Americans who want a car that doesn't cost them a bunch of money to fill up with gas? You know, right? We're going to buy our cars from Europe.
That's right.
Is it safe to say that Trump is engaging in both collusion and delusion?
I think it's collusion, delusion, and confusion. I think there are all kinds of fusions that he's under. Yes, yes. Well, I saw a report this week that to switch back to Massachusetts policy, that the wind turbines that are proposed to be built. So, back up. 2 years ago, the Massachusetts House of Massachusetts legislature required that the state acquire something like 1.6 gigawatts of wind turbine power, which has led to the development of 800 megawatts, that's to say 0.8 gigawatts of wind power off of Martha's Vineyard. And it turns out this past week, the people that have gotten the contract for putting in this vineyard wind turbine field reported the price that they would be willing to sell electricity at. And it was strikingly low. I don't know if either of you saw it, but it was almost competitive with the hydropower that's coming down from Quebec. And many of the industry analysts are quite surprised that this vineyard wind company is willing to sign up and provide wind power over a 20-year period at a cost that's roughly comparable to hydropower. I mean, that says a lot for the future of electricity in the Massachusetts area, right? Did you see anything there, DR?
Yes, I did see that report. And again, as we've mentioned before, you know, this is, you know, a bit of a, I guess I'm going to botch the pronunciation, schadenfreude, I guess. All those people who tried to kill the Cape Wind project, now we're seeing, you know, wind thriving and surviving. Yeah, all these people who hated the prospect of, you know, moving towards cleaner forms of energy. Now they're going to have to, they're either going to have to like it or lump it.
Well, I guess the other thing that we should point out, because this has been a particularly hot week here in the Boston area, hot and humid, is the concept of a really interesting new program that you can sign up for. So just as backdrop, you guys correct me if I'm wrong, but there is a climate-related phenomena that happens on hot days. So on a hot day, everyone turns on their air conditioning. And that increases the demand for electric power. And typically that demand for electric power has a peak in mid-afternoon. So on a hot day, 3 p.m, kids are all crabby, hubby's coming home, you know, everything's running, you got to turn the air conditioner up, everything at every corporate headquarters is completely air conditioned, you need a lot of power. At that point, the utilities begin to turn on more and more dirty coal power, more and more dirty plants. Traditionally, coal-powered plants are nowadays to be a natural gas plant that has the highest output of carbon dioxide per kilowatt hour of electricity made. Right. So those hot summer days, there's lots and lots of power demand. So nowadays, it's possible. We'll put up a link. You send a text in. You send in your phone number, and I think it's Mass Energy will send you a text on the afternoon that says, "Oh, you should shave the power." And if you turn down the power in your home, and enough people do that, then that reduces the peak demand on those hot, hot days. And then that means you don't need to turn on the dirty power plant to give you those last few megawatts of electricity. I just think it's a great example of kind of the internet and the social networking that's possible to address the climate change issue. I signed up for that. I was running around turning off of various kinds of electricity the other day. Have either of you seen that? I know you've been traveling, Mariah, but DR, did you see any of it?
Yes, indeed, it's a great idea, and it just goes to show you that, you know, the wisdom of what can be done on a statewide basis, even as the federal government goes wayward on these sorts of issues.
And it gives you the opportunity to take a personal action, and I think it deepens people's understanding of where their electricity comes from. I think most people have not a great idea of where their electricity comes from.
I have to say, I've heard of this. I haven't yet found it, but there is this idea where you can, or an air conditioner where you can you know, freeze ice when there's not a lot of demand for not a lot of demand for energy, and then turn on a fan that blows over the ice when there is a lot of demand for energy, and that's an air conditioner for you. And the fan doesn't use nearly as much energy as it takes to freeze the ice or to run an air conditioner. So, you know, the other thing to look out for is, I think definitely that shave the peak is a great idea. And then also trying to find these sort of innovative solutions that use energy at times where we have plenty and store it in ways that where it benefits us in ways when there is, you know, peak demand.
Yeah. That's why we all need to buy stock in electric battery storage companies, because that's where the future is going to be, right? Store your electricity in someplace and then call it back out when you need it.
Yeah, although I think definitely batteries, I hope we are making more and more efficient batteries, but there's, you know, problems with batteries too, right? What do you do with the lithium atom ion batteries when they're spent? So, you know, I do really like these solutions that think sort of more creatively about energy storage, you know, or where you kind of put water up high and then you release it and it turns a turbine. You pump it up high when there's abundant energy and then release it when there's low energy and it turns a turbine to, I mean, when there's peak demand and it turns a turbine to create energy for you. So these
I've heard the idea of that there's people proposing that we should go to old coal mines and use the wind turbine energy to pump compressed air into the mine, and then when you need electricity, you turn the switch the other way and let the compressed air come out of the mine and drive a turbine, and you get your electricity on demand.
Yeah, I mean, I think all those solutions are really important to not think of battery just as sort of an object that stores energy, but just think of all the creative ways we can store energy that sort of, I don't know the right word for it, but it's like the demand energy balance or something. It keeps us where the demand for energy is sort of more balanced instead of being at these peak times. Because that's what hurts us. As you said, when do we use the dirty coal energy? We use it when everyone needs a whole bunch of energy. And if we can just balance that out, renewables can supply us with what we need.
Right.
But it's really important that we balance it out.
So there you go. That's your seminar on electricity, the power grid this week. Let me say that you should keep in mind, dear listener, that on September 8th, there will be a nationwide set of local climate activities, all in concert in support of the We Rise effort being run by 350.org, the Bill McKibben Group. So you should check out, we'll put a link on the page, on the webpage, so you can find out how you can start your own climate demonstration in your backyard. As I say, we'll put up links to most of what we talked about on the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can check out the link to this show and other stuff on our Facebook page. It's /massclimateaction. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio or Apple Podcast. So if any of those places, please rate our show, give it a few stars so that we can move up in the rankings. So we'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks very much for being here, Mariah.
Thank you.
DR, thanks for making the time to be with us.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.